terrific for them. But we're already seeing in Colorado a more established market, a little bit of that consolidation, which, again, from a franchising perspective, gets a little bit away from the fragmentation that we have now towards some stability. And I think what we're pioneering among many things is brand consistency, customer experience consistency, all the things that we all franchise people hang our hats on. It doesn't exist in cannabis. It's one of the things we're really excited to be introducing to the industry. Mm-hmm.
Great.
I think, you know, just thinking back to my earlier years in the 1960s, things have changed a lot. one of the things that has changed, you know, I noticed in looking at your bio a little bit that you were in development with a Hawaiian coffee company called Maui Waui. In my day, it wasn't coffee.
The irony of my background in that is awesome. There's some foreshadowing there, I think.
So, I, you know, things have really changed, I think, you know, since the late 60s when I was a kid. And, you know, I think I'd like to get a little maybe background on how much they've changed, you know, because a lot of the people who are going to be investing in some of these things will be, of the older generation who have maybe gotten away from the whole cannabis scene since they were a kid, and now what has changed, you know, that would really surprise someone like that?
Yeah, I think a lot has changed. I'll give you a couple of examples. So we have 118,000 square foot cultivation facility here. We're one of the more award-winning cannabis growers in the world. And so it's really a fun thing to take people on that tour as part of our discovery day. The personal story, my folks came on that tour, and my dad was talking a lot about back in the day, the pot that he used to smoke, and he was asking Corey, who's our head of cultivation there, and the most award-winning grower in the world, what the difference is. He said, well, it's all about THC content, and I don't pretend to be an expert in this, but, you know, how potent the pot is. And he talked about back in the day that they were discussing, you know, you're talking about numbers of, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6. And he said, well, what are the numbers now? And he said, well, we didn't do anything under, I think it was 27. So it's a big difference. Where you sit down and smoke a joint, or, you know, with a product today, it's a very different experience. So I think the potency and the quality is one of the really big changes from that era to today. I think accessibility, and this changes not so much from the 60s and 70s to today, but from today to today if you're in a different market. So if people come out from markets that are illegal, I think they don't fully believe me. If they can walk into a store and walk out with weed, I think it just blows people's mind. And they think there must be some, it's either got to be seedy and shady and unsafe, or you must have to go through so many. It's just like going into a liquor store. Right? You go in, you show your ID, you go into a good dispensary, it's clean, it's safe, you've got a knowledgeable staff that can walk you through a product experience if you don't know what you're doing and you have questions. And then you walk out with weed. It's really normal. And I think that that's a huge change, even from market to market today. We have people come from discovery days and oftentimes say, I just had to see it for myself. I want to see you walk into a store and buy weed. So, okay.
Definitely. And you used a good choice of words, blow your mind.
No. Yeah.
All right. I want to smoke on. Here it goes. All right. Can I talk now?
Yeah. You can talk now.
Thank you. Justin, just a couple of questions for you. So your franchise, is it just focused on recreational cannabis? Can you tell our viewers a little bit about what they get when they purchase a franchise from you? Tell them what the streams of revenue and how you're going to grow with them as the laws grow.
Yeah.
So
there's so many grows, and we're blazing new trails, smoking the competition, and I just didn't want
Are you smoking now, by the way, Justin?
No, of course not.
You already asked me for wine. I was just wondering.
So the reality is, anywhere it's legal, we can go, right? So that's not just adult use, the recreational, that's also medicinal. But I will say that from state to state, that varies a lot. So some medicinal states don't really have brick and mortar, so they don't have dispensaries. They're more of a caregiver model. So if there isn't a place to go buy, there's not a retail place, and there's really not a franchise place at this time. So it's kind of important to understand each market by market. And you know, when I talk to prospects or I talk to brokers, and I always lead, and I'm sure you've heard me say this, but what's complicated, but, and then we answer the question, because
right.
There's a lot of complications in the country. So the reality is, if you can sell cannabis products at a brick and mortar retail store at a dispensary, then there's an opportunity for franchise. And so for us, also, I would say people that are getting into the medicinal side of things, oftentimes, and Illinois is the most recent example, if you have a medical license to sell, and then the state goes recreational, oftentimes those medical licenses convert. And so you kind of have that first bite of the apple. And so getting into a state, first of all, the medical business is great. Medical cannabis is great. You do a lot of good. There's a lot of medicinal benefits to this. You can really change people's lives. But from a retail standpoint and business standpoint, the money's really good too. And so getting into it to operate as a medical dispensary is not necessarily a bad business decision, but oftentimes it's also a great foot in the door or segue into when a state becomes recreational. We're there for all of it. Our support systems, processes based off of doing this for a decade, making those really expensive mistakes and having recipes and ingredients for others to not make those mistakes and then be compliant and profitable, that transcends whatever that relationship is with the state. So if it's medical, we go medical. If it's rec, we go rec. Depending on whether those state requirements, we're certainly flexible to deal with that.
Okay. So I think right now your goal is to get into the states as they come up. So basically, if a franchisee wants to enter into this very complex world of the cannabis industry, or a person, an investor period, a really good way to start is quote-unquote business in a box where you have everything done and processed for them. Can you tell us a little bit about the marketing behind what you do for them, the branding, and all of those things that they don't have to deal with by coming in to an industry where you're already the expert?
Yeah, I love that. And because I promised it, I'll tell you, it's complicated because it varies from state to state, but our systems and processes have been through everything, right? We started, I think our first dispensary was two guys with duffel bags pushing it down the road. And so we've come from that to medical to recreational and a very well-established market here in Colorado. So all of those systems and processes to help navigate some of those complications from how you set up the business, how you market the business, which even that changes from state to state. In California and Vegas, you see billboards and you see every taxi cab, if you've been to Vegas, has something. Here in Colorado, the only advertising you see is the little green adopt a highway sign. This section of highway is by one cannabis. So but the states and also, again, municipalities, but states are really dictating our ability. Google, not a big fan of us in this industry. Facebook, not a big fan of us in this industry. It's going to take time. That stigma is changing, especially as more and more states come on board. So there's a lot of guerrilla marketing and a lot of working with our marketing team to make sure that you are deploying your capital in a responsible way to maximize the return. And again, we tailor that to whatever is legal and available in your area. There's a lot of very specific industry weed maps and things like that that we utilize to make sure that we're driving traffic as strong as possible so that people can be as profitable as possible. But it changes a lot. But again, those systems and processes have endured the changes throughout Colorado. So as new states are coming on board and people are coming to us saying, but in this state, they have these rules. Most of the time you go, oh yeah, we did that like 8 years ago. And we were able to navigate what that looks like. It's rare, and there's been a couple of states that have really done a poor job of launching this. It's pretty rare. It's the most
California.
Yeah, California has done an okay job. Florida has not done an okay job. But there's always hurdles to go over. The good news is we have 125 people on staff here, some of the smartest and brightest in franchising, legal, and cannabis. And so we know what the hurdles are. We know how to work on.
Well, thanks, Justin. I think we have to go to a commercial now. Is that right, Fred?
Yes, that's correct. It's now time for a commercial. I want to thank everybody that's putting up with us on Facebook, YouTube, Periscope at the website, and BTR. I know we've been having some audio issues. I think we got most of them caught up. We're still working on them. You can dial in at 323-580-5755. That's 323-580-5755. Or, as the people on the website are saying, people actually on the website are saying it is getting better to listen to. Yay! So, pillarsoffranchising.com, you can ask questions. Awesome. And now a word from our first sponsor. And there we go.
Are you thinking about opening a business? Whether you're in transition from a corporate job, looking to generate investment income, add to your existing business, or just too young to retire, come to the Great American Franchise Expo and explore your options. Meet face-to-face with dozens of franchise executives representing dozens of quality brands. A wide range of price points and ownership models are available. Attend our free seminars on accounting, real estate, and marketing. Franchise law experts will be there to answer your questions, and banks are on hand to discuss loans and financing. The first 100 attendees will receive free VR goggles. For free tickets, visit www.franexpousa.com. The Great American Franchise Expo, coming to a city near you in 2019. Check our website for schedules.
Thanks, Abel. And the next Great American Franchise Expo is actually this weekend in Jacksonville, Florida, at the Prime Osborne Center Convention Center. The following one will be in Washington, D.C. at the Delos Expo Center, October 5th and 6th. Sadly, I won't be able to make either of them. And now, a word from another sponsor.
Hey, franchise owners. How's your local marketing? Do you feel like you could use some help keeping up with your social media posts and comments and reviews? Do you wonder if you could be doing more to attract local customers? Are you able to identify new move-ins to your local area? At West Vines, we help franchisees like you reach more local customers through digital marketing. With daily monitoring, creative content, and ad placement, and customer data intelligence, we'll get your business in front of the people who want your products or services. We also work with franchisors who need an agency to handle the digital marketing for all of their locations. If you're ready to reach more local customers, give us a call at 805-265-5440 or visit us at westvine.com. That's 805-265-5440 or westvine with a Y dot com.
Thanks, Michelle. And actually, a really quick, another link local network note. They're getting ready to, they're in process of turning on their business for sale. So for all you folks that are looking for work-life balance and you think of businesses in the future, head to the website. You'll be able to find wonderful new businesses for sale. We've gotten our first two business brokers signed up, and they're in process of sending us their business listings. Who's the first one, Holly?
That would be Zarian Firm. Zarian has, probably put 20 businesses or so on your website. Those are great cash flowing businesses, so you can connect with that. And when you inquire about it, you'll get a free book. So should we go into that, Fred?
I was just going to give you, what I was going to say, folks, is as you'll find out from a later sponsor, you can come to the website and either get a copy of the Franchise MBA by Nick Neonakis, friend, sponsor, and all-around good egg, or you can fill out the form. And instead of the Franchise MBA book, what can you get, Holly?
You can get a book. I feel like such a, spammy, disgusting marketer, telemarketer here, but yeah. So I wrote a book called Create Your Own Wealth, It's 2 Minute Topics in Franchising, and all of those topics are really derived from the segments I was doing on Pillars here with Fred prior to getting the great privilege to host with my buddies, Ray and Fred. Anyway, that book is really good. It's got some really good information on, and Fred, really good information on there to help you with financing businesses, what do you look for in a business, why buy a resale versus the new, et cetera. So glad to pass those out.
All right. So, wow, I just broke my chopstick. Oh, well. Back to the show. So, Justin, while I've been fighting away at the sound issues, and I'll stay hidden for a while, come back later. But so my question is that, you know, for I know in California, either if you're in the big city, you've been like no problem or minimal problem. But when you get out to the smaller, we'll say second tier cities, the non-San Francisco, Los Angeles, there seems to be a lot of roadblocks thrown up by local governments that just seem to want to drag their feet. Have you seen that in the states you have franchisees in? Or if so, what's been your way of making sure your franchise gets situated, located, and up and running, getting past the local government?
Yeah, so it's interesting. California is a great case study for how things vary wildly within a state from city to city. States, for the most part, can always have rules that are more stringent. I'm sorry, cities can always have rules that are more stringent than the state. The state says cannabis is okay. The city says not okay here. And that happens here in Colorado. It happens in every state. Municipalities opt out. The reality is oftentimes they opt in sooner rather than later, which kind of provides an opportunity for folks to get additional licenses. But what you see is states that are just being cautious, right? And cities that are just being cautious. And they don't want to be the first. They don't want to be the guinea pigs. And what they then see is their neighboring cities or neighboring states and the tax revenue that's being generated and the fact that perhaps the crime rate went down, the opioid crisis is better. They see all the good that's happening, all the tax revenue is being generated, and you see a lot of these states and cities that opted out or they haven't yet passed it coming on board, which yields new licenses. But for us, on a state-by-state and city-by-city basis for our franchisees, it's identifying where and when there are opportunities and then giving them the best chance of being awarded those licenses for those opportunities. And sometimes it's a game of hurry up and wait. And sometimes it's a game of I live in a city or I live in a state that is not legal and choose to go somewhere else. It's kind of one of those complications that's given by the industry right now, which is there's a lot of inconsistencies in where the opportunities are. So our job is to put people into the best opportunities. And oftentimes that means that people have to be a bit flexible on where they operate their business.
So you will actually, if somebody wants to buy a franchise, you will actually say, no, you don't want to put it there. You want to move it here.
Sure. It's actually, as every good franchisor is going to give that advice. The good, bad, or indifferent, I guess, in our industry is that sometimes that's not up to us, right? The cities are saying, no, you can't go here. Or there are setbacks where locations have to be 1,000 feet from a park, a daycare, a church, a liquor store, another dispensary, a school. And so you go, okay, well, here's the spot, right? And so a lot of those are being dictated by a lot of those policies. And we even have folks that are in states that are not legal that are choosing to come, say, for example, and do an acquisition strategy here in the Denver market or something. So depends on the buyer, depends on how flexible they are and where they live. When the first two questions that we ask people are, how much money do you have and where do you live? And we're making sure people have the capital, and that's cash, right? A lot of franchisors will say, well, what's your net worth? I get people on fire. Have a net worth of $2 million. It doesn't matter, right? It's all about liquidity. So how much cash do you have and where to go to the state and operate in the state, like a lot of multi-unit folks, for example, are. There are lots of states where the opportunity is really cool.
So then I'll have one more quick question. So then actually my next question comes from, is your one cannabis Are you only dealing in cannabis, or have you started dealing in hemp, which is now federally legal?
Cannabis. THC products.
Is that federally legal now?
Yeah. From the last farm bill, hemp is...
So even CBD is a big crazy now. It'll be interesting to see. Time will tell kind of where that industry goes. But even the CBD products that we have in our dispensaries, they have to contain THC. So specifically, we are selling cannabis THC products.
Okay.
Doesn't the hemp plant have THC to a small kind of like 0.3%?
Below 0.3%, yes, and you can still take a hemp plant and cross-pollinate it from just up to 10 miles away from a cannabis plant and still screw up a hemp crop. But it's considered minor compared to the feds.
Okay.
I know way too much about both topics.
Yeah, you're scaring me, Fred, really and truly. I have a question for you. So, what customer base do you target? I mean, are you looking at, because the cannabis demographic seems to be really hitting a younger millennial, but yet there's this luxury branding side of this, with tobacco coming in and big players. What do you target?
Yeah, so as a brand, we're very much into a consultative approach and a kind of very interactive system, a very high quality product. But accessible. We talk a lot about Whole Foods or REI, kind of that high end of accessible. From a target, it's really changing. So in the early days, it was really heavy, right? It was people who had been buying for many years. They had a guy, and they always bought from that guy in that guy's basement. And in fact, a lot of the early dispensaries looked like that guy's basement, right? So the reality is there's been a massive shift in who the customer is. Not away from those early adopters and heavy users from the original days, but just a more normalized market. So a lot of dispensaries, we talk about some of the consolidation and what we're trying to do for consistency and branding. What's always been important to us is to be nice. What goes into the house for medicinal. And so for us, being able to have a clean, safe environment with a lot of different products used, and actually a question, I don't think we finished, we got sidetracked right earlier on one of the big, big differences from the 60s and 70s or even a couple of years ago, is how product is consumed. So for us, we have an incredible reputation on our actual flower, and so that's still our biggest seller. But as millennials begin to become customers and as that customer base shifts to somebody who is less about the ritual of going home and rolling a joint or packing a bowl, you're seeing lots of different methods of consumption through vaping, through transdermal patches, through oils, through tinctures, through edibles and butters. And I mean, it's amazing. Every time we walk into our dispensary, where we have over 500 SKUs, there's some way of smoking or consuming cannabis that I have no idea how to do. I think that's probably the biggest change, Ray, from your question earlier, is there's just a lot of different ways to consume cannabis now to meet your needs. And sometimes that's to be discreet. Sometimes it's to not have the odor. Sometimes it's you're in a hurry. You're going to a concert, on a golf course, whatever that may be. There's lots of different ways of consumption. But what you're going to see if you stand outside or park outside of a nice dispensary, it's just us. It's just normal people that are going in. The same people that go into the liquor store, the same people that are going into the grocery store are now going into the dispensary. So dispensaries who don't have the ability, they're not equipped to change with those times, they're going away. And through franchising, that gives us the ability to kind of pioneer the new look and feel and keep that kind of high-end and attainable look, feel, brand, customer, and product experience to address that new climate and new demographic.
Yeah, Justin, quick question about Denver. There's a cannabis CBD Expo, right? in October. Will you be present there, or I heard you're going to be a booth sponsor. Like, how does that work? And do we know what booth you're in? And how can everybody come and visit you, that of our Colorado audience that are listening to you, that really, really probably want to pick up on a franchise here?
Yeah, so we do a great show circuit of cannabis shows and expos in the franchise world. And the CBD Expo here, we have some good friends that are exhibiting that we're going to co-sponsor with them and get into their booth. There's a lot of crossover. I think it's an important distinction to talk about the difference between what we're doing as a dispensary and CBD. They're not the same. But obviously, CBD and kind of the widespread acceptance of that has made the plant a little bit less scary, right? It's kind of talked about some of the medicinal elements of that. And CBD crowd, from a business standpoint, and the THC crowd, from a cannabis standpoint, there's a lot of overlap. And business opportunities are huge. And so a lot of states where there is no cannabis legalization yet, CBD is crazy. And CBD stores popping up, and CBD and at the shoe store, and the barber, and the suits, and everybody has CBD products. So it's been a really interesting market, and a lot of folks are in CBD to be in CBD. But kind of like we talked about earlier with the medicinal and medicinal dispensary, a lot of folks are using it as a second film to get into full cannabis or THC as well. So we're excited to be here in Denver and co-sponsoring and living at that show and meeting people who are in some version of this space and talking about the opportunity that we have.
Awesome. Well, I have one more for you, and then I know Ray has an important question. So because of the federal, restrictions on, loans and obviously payment processing, I heard, 150 people got dumped from the payment processors because of the federal legality. What do you do with your franchisees? How do they accept payments? What is your workaround here?
Yeah, So there is workarounds, and those workarounds change. We had a great payment processing here in Denver where you could use a credit card to buy a gift card, and then you could use that reloadable gift card, and then that went away. So things do change. I think because a lot of credit card and payment processing and banking is all federally backed, we are seeing some, that is certainly one of the hurdles. The good news is it's getting better, and the good news for our franchisees is that we've operated in every aspect. When we could take actual credit cards to the gift cards to pen-based to cash only, and we've been able to adjust. Sometimes that has to happen, even that change from a day-to-day basis. So not only have we done all of those different pieces, but we also know how to deal with customers and inform customers and not alienate customers when they come in and they use their pen-based credit card yesterday, but they can't use it today. So it's one of those real bummers of this industry, but we get through it. We're still doing massive amounts of sales with it. When we go in those cash-only phases, which we sometimes have to do, first of all, we've done a lot. We've done 4 years of cash-only. We can help our franchisees with that. But it's also about educating the customer. And frankly, customers that come by, they understand. We have an ATM in our lobby, and yes, it's sometimes a bit of an inconvenience, but customers understand. And frankly, old habits die hard. A lot of people go to the ATM, they get their $40-$60 out, and they come in and they buy weed. I've always bought.
Okay.
So being cash only isn't the shock at all factor that a lot of people get to that.
And do your franchisees have internet websites for products that they can sell that way?
So selling online hasn't really taken off yet. I'm not sure that it will. Take alcohol, for example. There's some delivery services, there's some online shopping, but it's rare, and it's really just about making sure that the product doesn't get into the wrong hands, and this will be the same. So as things change, and it changes from city to city and state to state, delivery options, shipping options, order online and pickup options, we'll be able to tailor that specifically to the state rules. What you're finding more widespread is people being able to order online and pick up, which is really terrific.
What about delivery options?
Yeah, I think you'll see some drive-thrus, and I think you'll see some delivery options. People worry about the delivery of it getting into the hands of kids or the wrong person, but the reality is they've been delivering alcohol for a long, long time. You need an age-verified signature. in that one respect, we're not building rocket ships. It's actually probably one of the easier things.
Love it. Go ahead, Ray.
Franchise.
Say that again, Ray.
If someone was interested. And I'm getting a phone call.
All right, I'll jump in. Do you want a delivery app, Justin? You know, I've actually got a client with Zarian that's selling a delivery app. It's fantastic. It's like Uber Eats. Are you interested? I'll hook you up.
You got a guy. You always got a guy. I like it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right, I'll hook you up after the show. Okay, Ray, you can go now.
So, going back to, my phone rings about 10 times a day with sales calls. Anyway, so if someone was interested, what's it going to take for that person to get into your franchise, and how do they get a hold of you to do that?
Yeah, so first of all, you have to be incredibly awesome. We have a pretty strict policy on that. One of the things I would say is that we have the luxury of building a system from scratch and building with intention. So I joke around about that, but the reality is we're building a family, we're building a culture, and we actually are pretty serious about making sure there's a good cultural fit. A lot of this looks just like a normal franchise. We go through a pretty standard mutual education process. You can find us at OCG Inc., that's One Cannabis Group Inc. Of course, you got to be a little sneaky in this industry still, but One Cannabis Group. So OCGE.com, there's a way to get some questions answered and see a lot of information. I don't know if there'll be a slide or something with contact information, but contacting me directly, Justin at OCGE.com is a great way to go. It's fun to have these conversations. We have a lot of conversations with people who in the end decide this is probably not for them. The risk is too high or too early, or they're just not one of those ground floor pioneer types, and I get that. The good news is we are those ground floor pioneer types, and we've been taking arrows as pioneers for a decade now, and we're ready to kind of help shepherd these things away.
So on Discovery Day, bring munchies?
Yeah, bring munchies. We'll take care of the weed, you bring the shoes.
Hey, Justin, I have a question about lounges. So what's the lounge? I know you have a lounge in Vegas. What's going on with that? I mean, if you think about this, if we're going to be recreational here, we've got bars. Why wouldn't we have a lounge? You know, maybe a lounge with a lot of different variety of experiences.
Yeah, so lounges are awesome. It's part of the dream. It's complicated. It's complicated and varies a lot. Most states are trying to figure out how to sell it and don't even want to consider the opportunity for a lounge. There's definitely some things, some bridges that have to be crossed, right? There's a lot of lounges that are dealing with, okay, we've got the ability to do a lounge, but it's still a no smoking state. So it's just no smoking. So I think you'll find maybe something to do. Well, you can't smoke in a bar, right? Smoke in a restaurant. I mean, almost all states now are no smoking. And so that presents an issue. So then you're talking about, is it a private club, or is it a coffee shop style where you can do edibles and those kind of things? There's a smoky rooftop bar, a lounge, or a patio or something. So I think lounges are going to be an awesome thing. I think we're a ways out from, I think, a kind of a holistic acceptance of that idea. But lounges, if you've read Christian, who founded this, literally wrote the book on this industry, it's called Big Weed. And he talks a lot about his kind of lounge dream back in the day where he was paying the architect with a backpack full of cash. So it's been a dream for a long time, and I think lounges are going to be pretty revolutionary. But I think we're a ways out from really that being fully accepted in lots of different states.
So, and Latin America is opening up. So what are the regulations there, and can we get in there early?
So there's a lot of countries, actually, that are opening up. And, you know, part of me, my background is international business, so part of me looks at a world map and starts throwing darts, right? So I'm like, let's go there. And then part of me
looks
at it. And we haven't even started in the U.S.
I
can't read
that about you, Justin.
Sometimes I find that that you just have to focus. But there is great opportunity.
I'm making muscles, Justin, right now, yeah.
Yep. Having done bars internationally in lots of different countries, I think that there's so much opportunity. The world is a pretty small place, and when you have a good system, well thought out, and understand what you're doing, you're the best in your field as a company. There's opportunity everywhere.
And I have one more on the on this massive growth that we're seeing. There's a lot of angel investors right now that are coming in. In fact, with Zarian, we speak to them quite often. Angel investors want great opportunities, but they don't want to be an owner operator in any way. Are there any ways that an angel investor group could become like a master licensee for your brand?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, there's a matchmaking service to be had here, because we have lots of people who want to get in but don't have that capital. Even through our conversation earlier, maybe they have $250,000 or $500,000, which any other industry would allow them to do anything they want to. They can't even break into this industry. So I think there's a lot of people to be connected to those folks that are great operators but need the capital. And I'll just say, in addition to that, most of the people that we're talking to are – they've retired out, so they've got the cash. They're multi-unit franchisees, so they understand franchising and retail, and they have the ability to spin off some cash and diversify a little bit. Very few people are looking to be owner-operators. In fact, we've got a lot of people in different states that we've talked about who are looking to come here and have operations in Denver, but they're not relocating. They're not moving. So this is a pretty good passive ownership. So for a lot of folks that have that cash, they don't want to stand behind the counter and sell weed all day. If you can drop $1.5 million, you're probably not going to want to be a bartender. We've got systems and processes. Our team here is our executive team. They're not in the store here. And so we've got a good system and program and process for security and compliance and inventory management and staffing and training and training of managers to allow people to be up and running with, I hate the term absentee, but a relatively passive ownership.
Got it. So what about dispensaries right now? Obviously, there are a lot of dispensary owners that probably, want to expand and don't have the cash maybe yet to do so, and they've got a couple of businesses. Is there a way that they could convert those dispensaries into your brand? Maybe like they can start 3 franchises, convert their 2. How would that work, Justin?
You're in my head, Holly. Yeah, so we have a really pretty aggressive and well thought out conversion strategy. So the reality is, this business is hard, very difficult. If you open your doors, you can sell weed. That's not the tough part. The tough part is being consistent, being compliant. That's a really big piece. Profitability without compliance in this industry, no bueno. And so, understanding how to be compliant and profitable and part of a bigger brand as we start to get that transition. And a little bit of consolidation and other multi-state organizations, big giants starting to have the ability to move into some states, a lot of these independent folks need help. So we have a really well thought out strategy for conversion for people who say, listen, here's this. I've been running it. I'm working in the business because I'm making a fair amount of money, right? But not enough money to hire marketing and compliance and inventory and logistics and legal and all those kinds of things. I need your help. Wrapping them into the franchise program gives them instant access to that whole team of 125 plus, with a decade of experience, a decade of systems and processes that we've built to be more successful, more profitable, remain compliant, but also be plugged into brand recognition that in the coming 3, 6, 9 months is going to mean a great deal.
Oh, that's great. Awesome.
Yeah.
Ray, go ahead.
No, I asked my final question. So now it's Fred's turn. Fred, go ahead.
All right. So I since somebody wanted to smoke a joint, I put the virtual.
Hey, don't poke out that joint.
And
that's me.
Well, that's actually a picture of Holly. What people don't realize is that's actually she always bogarts. So. Normally, I would ask the Max or the Addison question, but I got a feeling if I did, my daughter would just strangle me the next time she's
on.
So
that one right off.
we're gonna go down the rabbit hole.
Oh,
yeah.
No rabbit holes.
We're going down the rabbit.
One of the smaller ones.
Now, this is you can take the red pill or the blue pill. And given that, you know, where we are and who we're talking to, we're probably, this is going to be a blue pill type of thing. So, what evidence have you seen, or how are your franchisees seeing the zombie apocalypse?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question.
Yeah,
you'd be amazed at how many people like the zombie apocalypse question. I prefer the Area 51 question, but I thought this would be,
yeah,
you know.
I mean, he's going to handle this because we're all just going to get high and watch it happen.
You may get high on video. I never will. I don't need the feds having evidence of me, so, you know.
Oh, please. Scared little boy. Don't be like that. And that doesn't look like my nose on that joint thing. No.
I think, look, you've got people in this industry that are creative and embrace the opportunity to be ultra creative. And so I think we're part of the apocalypse, man. We're part of the we're team zombie all the way.
Okie dokie. So, we're going to take a quick break here and go to a couple of commercials.
Did we get more questions with Justin? All right.
We'll get a couple of more questions with Justin. But first, we want to do a commercial, unless I miss my guess, which we really do, don't we? Because then we can talk about the book again. So, we will talk to our...
Glad I love it.
We will talk to our friends at the Franchise Consulting Company. Hey, Nick, you there?
Ever wonder how successful business people get educated about franchise business options? The Franchise Consulting Company is a group of over 100 franchise professionals with more than 2,000 years of franchise experience. We help our clients select and investigate franchise companies. And like a realtor, our services are free of charge to you. Our fees are paid by the seller. Reach out to us to learn more and get a free copy of the Franchise MBA, the number one bestseller and highest reviewed book on Amazon in the franchise category. Our website is thefranchiseconsultingcompany.com or feel free to call us on 800-321-6072.
Thanks, Nick. And now a word from our another fine, friendly, sometimes flipping me off sponsor, our friends at Zarian.
Zarian Firm International Business Brokers is truly unique in the business resale space. While the average business broker uses one standard multiplier across all businesses and industries to value a business, Zarian Firm is the only business brokerage that looks at the five factors of distinction in each individual business. This gives our sellers a true value and our buyers a fair price. Zarian offers sellers the choice of three marketing packages based on how quickly they want to sell their business. But all of our businesses sell 33% faster than the industry norm.
Zarian Firm International Business Brokers connects premium investors with validated business opportunities.
And thanks, Holly. We're back, as those of us who heard the chuckles in the background as Holly was doing silly things. Message me and I'll actually tell you what she really was doing that you don't want to be known.
Yeah, you can see the lip gloss on Fred right now. All right. Hey, Justin, I've got a great question for you. So cannabis cafes are opening up all over the place. How are they staying compliant? Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, so whether it's a lounge or a cafe or delivery or a medical or recreational, the rules are really clear. They're long, they're lengthy, but they're clearly identified. And one of the things that I think is an advantage of this situation in this industry where everything else is really quite complicated is that you know absolutely what it takes to be compliant, whether it's a cultivation facility or a cafe or everywhere in between. You know how the product is to be handled. There's incredible amounts of tracking that goes into the speed of sale. And compliance and commitment to compliance is a difference than being successful or consequences that in this industry can be pretty incredible. So, you know, I think it's really about, for us, it's about finding the right people, being able to make sure that they value compliance as much as profitability, and that they're committed to the long term. You hear and you read stories about people that get in trouble for being out of compliance, and typically it's not an accident, it's something that's very intentional. And just like any other industry, if you're going to intentionally break the rules, there are going to be consequences. The majority of this industry understands, appreciates, and embraces those.
Yeah, so the LA West Hollywood brand opens its first luxury cafe. Tell us about that a little bit, you know.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a lot of options. I don't know specifically, you know, on that, but which I just read, I read them all the time. If you're watching this industry of restaurants that are specifically serving, you know, food that's cannabis infused, or actually our team and the system standards, so I think when they were at a bar that specifically was serving cannabis infused beer. There's no alcohol. It was cannabis infused products. And so I think that's one of the things that's going to come out as we continue to get into these cafes and lounges is how and if, but I think there's some real unknowns on how these things play. If you have the opportunity for people to have both cannabis infused products and alcohol, I think it's a recipe that scares the heck out of a lot of folks, as it should. And so making sure that we have criteria and rules and regulations that keep everybody safe. Because sometimes, look, if you want to go make a bad decision at a bar, that's your prerogative. But sometimes there's not enough education around what effect that a product will have or how it's going to interact with another product. So this is something that we'll enter into and be very careful about.
Right, that's a good point. But tobacco and alcohol have been mixed together for, you know, a little while.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, I don't know. What I have a question, just sorry, Fred, this is really something that's been on my mind, and that is the hybridization of cannabis plants. You know, we're getting into breeding F1, F2, F3, F4, you know, and we're increasing the psychotropic effects, correct? You know, up to 40%, you know, I've heard now. So how is that hybridization of that plant? Like, you know, we know of some of the problems that have happened with wheat hybridization. Is this causing other effects that we haven't scientifically researched? Do we need to look for organic weed? Do we need to look for non-hybridized, non-GMO? I know obviously it's not been GMO'd yet, you know, weed. Tell me a little bit about that aspect of this business.
I think it's a really interesting point. Somebody the other day was touring our cultivation facility, which is really, really pretty amazing. And some of the standards that we use to keep our facility, you know, kind of top tier, I think are admirable and certainly more than most people are doing. And somebody said to us, is this organic? And the reality is there is no such thing really as organic, right? It's just even in organic certification, there's oftentimes no acceptable minimums. And because of the certification piece, like most products, there are products that are grown organically or grown responsibly, but don't necessarily have the certified organic stamp. And that's kind of where we are as an industry. I think like anything else, whether it's coffee or fruit or cannabis, or you want to make sure that you're buying from respectable sources. You know, we put our cannabis up against anybody, but we do it all the time and won a lot of awards for it. But understanding that you're going to reputable dispensaries and that they are selling products from reputable cultivation, I think is really important. I think as we all as a society begin to move towards embracing kind of that knowledge from what we in this industry call speed to sale, but that farm to table or whatever, and knowing the source of what you put in your body, I think will be important in this industry just as it is in every other industry.
Right. There's a lot of farm to table options right now, right, that allow for on-premises cannabis consumption, right? And they have food and drink services as well. Are you thinking of doing that at all with your brand?
Yeah, I think as regulations change and we have some more ability to do some more creative and fun things, Denver is talking now about doing an event license where you can do these little pop-ups. I think that being able to, I hate the word craft. I'm not sure what a good alternative is yet, but you know, so craft cocktails, if your bartender's mustache is curly enough, it's a craft cocktail, and certainly craft beers have been around for a long time. And there's craft cannabis too, you know, guys like us that are winning awards by growing exceptionally high. It looks, it smells, it smokes, it tastes a very specific way and kind of top of class. Just like every other industry, whether it's the guy who has the everyday stuff, the everyday beer or the well liquor, there's that as well. And we just, you know, we fancy ourselves a little nicer than that. So I think as opportunities become available to do some fun things, we'll embrace that for sure.
I love it.
The cannabis industry is sort of paralleling the post prohibition industry in that all of a sudden, especially with, you know, prohibition, the alcohol, the bathtub gin tasted so terrible. That's why we have mixed drinks today. It's the same thing. I mean, basically, you know, smoking plain weed is not that exciting. It's, you know, if you don't smoke cigarettes or something like that, you're probably going to cough. So I think the whole industry is kind of paralleling that whole Western type, you know, searching for a better product, and you know, and we're seeing it in all the different ways that you know, cannabis is coming out.
Yeah, people draw parallels to that post-prohibition. I would argue that it's still illegal, so we're not quite to the post part yet, but because it's the way that it's freeing up, I agree. I think as it becomes more normal, just like anything else, it becomes competition and demand for a higher quality product. Mm-hmm. There's always going to be people who do the 5 o'clock vodka, but then you've got Tito's and Grey Goose and you know, and high end vodkas as well. So there needs to be a range, right? The diversity of life is important, and so there are people who come in and they've got a little bit of cash and they need to find cheap weed, but they need to find cheap food or cheap cigarettes or cheap food or whatever the case is going to be. So it takes all kinds. You know, we pride ourselves on really high quality products, and I think that's a miss for us. It's a pretty big miss because people want that high quality product. But certainly it takes all kinds, and you know, respect to everybody who's out there their winning work. Mm-hmm.
All right, so I'll jump back in here. Since we're talking about products, obviously you can't make every product underneath the sun, at least I'm assuming not at the start. So do you accept, we'll say, other vendors or suppliers' products?
Yeah, for sure. So in our dispensary, we've got over 500 SKUs because we're very, very good at growing weed. We're very, very good at selling weed. But there's a whole middle section that we made a conscious decision not to get into a process. And make whatever they're going to make, the oil, they're going to make acid, they're going to make acid, the edibles, they're going to make gummies, all those kinds of things. And just like any other industry, there are people who do really, really good work, and there are people who don't do so good work. And so for us, we want to make sure that our entire product line is elevated, so we control the flower and how exceptional the flower is. In the same way, we control who we work with from an outside vendor standpoint. We serve really cool content out there, and pictures, and all
chocolate.
Oh yeah, there's some phenomenal stuff out there.
Chocolate.
Yep, I had somebody on Discovery Day the other day, and they bought a chocolate bar that the flavor was coffee and donuts. Yeah, you're in. I know. A couple of weeks, you'll be here. Don't worry.
In there, and you're going to be a booth sponsor. I know. I've already heard about that. So, you're going to bring me chocolates.
what the rules are for sure. Hopefully our friends who we're doing the booth with come early, a day or so, and we can go out and do some tours and have some fun.
That sounds like a good plan.
So, my follow-up question is, if there are listeners out there that actually do have products, how would they go about getting them reviewed by you?
Yeah, so state by state, as we expand, these relationships are really critical. It's what lifts our brand up and holds our quality standards. And so we're contacting us directly to get to our operations team to do product evaluation of both the need. Come out every day that are not only best in class, but also perhaps even an entirely new way of consumption. And that's what I think is amazing. We had a company come in every day that was talking about these transdermal, I don't know if that's even the correct word, but transdermal patches that are like time release, 6 hour patches that you wear. I'm like, that's unbelievable. It's just crazy now the technology that is invested in this industry to be able to find different ways of consumption. The one Vegas that we do in December. There are many aisles where it's like a science lab with what these people are doing with the products and extraction methods. It's really pretty cool to watch.
I have one more very short question here, but I think it's kind of interesting. You have a lot of products that you're putting on the shelf, I'm assuming, right? Like, what if I'm a supplier? What if I, have an amazing brand? How do I get my brand on your shelf? Because, we deal with a lot of customers that have that as well.
Yeah, so shelf space is a premium, just like any other industry, right? The Coke and Pepsi, and, everybody's vying for that shelf space. So for us, we've got a pretty incredible operational team that is making sure that we are evaluating products. I may or may not be on that evaluation team. It's definitely a position here. I'm not, by the way. I'm the last person to be on that team. But we're trying to focus, and we over a period of time, we're looking for, is it unique? Is it original? Does it have a better taste, smell? The response that people get, is it more CBD focused and focused on pain relief, or is it more THC, psychoactive focused? And so we're always looking to stay cutting edge and make sure that we have the best existing and stable players and also the best new cutting edge players that are coming to the market seemingly daily.
So they can submit their product to you and you can look at the product and evaluate it and see if it's...
Well, it's sounding like there needs to be two samples. One set of samples that goes to Justin and one that goes to the product testing team. Is that what I'm hearing right?
Right.
That'll work.
And if Holly has her way about it, you need three sets of samples.
I make it four,
It's amazing how many people want to volunteer their time to be a part of this industry.
Yeah, volunteer. You're going to pay me to taste it. Then you can put, like, my taste in.
So, Ray, I just had a thought of this. They'd be a great way to cross-market with for giving stuff for customer loyalty anniversaries.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm sure, we could also, charge a little premium for putting the logo up on the product. Builders of Franchising, the official.
Oh, I was thinking Molly made it. I was going to say, like, you do that, dude. That ought to be really interesting.
Well, I don't think I want to go there because I'll probably lose my franchise.
I don't know. How many franchisees are in states where Justin's located? Like I said, I see a cross-marketing plan here.
Cross-marketing. Oh, where's the
The M word.
Yeah, I'm going to set it, and I'm not going there. So we'll go back to going up in smoke there. So at this point, since Ray's asked his last word, I've gone down the rabbit hole, and Holly's asked for a whole lot of cannabis stuff to ingest. We'll thank Justin Livingston of One Cannabis, he's the VP of Franchise Development, for putting up with our silliness today. We also want to thank all of our listeners who have been dealt with our growing pains. Videos look good.
Patiently listening. Watching.
Videos look good.
I did wine though, so yeah, no, it didn't work.
I need more munchies.
Yeah, the audio's been kind of like Holly's drinking, you know, on and off there, so it's all okay. So we'll be back next week, same bat time, same franchise channel. Like how I changed that up there?
I like it the other way.
Next week with more pillars of franchising. And amazingly enough, I only got flipped off once today. So there we go. Second time. She had to get a second one time and then couldn't let it go. And we're out of here, folks. Thanks.
Bye, guys. Love you.